The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Keenan Conan here with me as usual on a Monday to have a look through the weekend. Actually, this is the football show, football show. We have a separate Congress show that we're going to bring your way because we're going to talk to Jarlett Burns, and I went a little bit over, so we can't have it all into one podcast. So this is purely football, and we can talk about GAA politics in another one. And for this purely football show, our special guest sitting in studio is Conor McManus. Sing when we're top of the league, Conor.
Yeah, well, we're top as it sits at the minute, but a long way to go. But look at it, you could be in worse places, you know.
Yeah, we were just saying there how enjoyable this competition is. You know, you just big games every week, every second week against teams of your own ability, and it looks like Monaghan just really embracing the league and actually, you know, going for it.
Yeah, look at every game. You approach it on its own merits, but you're looking to win every game. That's the reality of it. Every time you go out, you're looking to win. You're playing the best teams in the country, and the way it sits at the minute, the league is our best competition. You know, you have like ability teams playing each other week in, week out. And they're coming, you know, 2 weeks in a row, week off, another game, 2 weeks in a row, and things like that. So it's ideal, you know, the training to games ratio is exactly how you want it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. When you're mapping out in your own head where we're going to pick up points, I suppose away to Kerry and away to Mayo probably weren't two games you were thinking I'm taking four out of those.
Yeah, well, look, you do know that they're difficult games. But, you know, that's the nature of the league. That's the nature of Division 1, that, you know, because they're coming thick and fast, and they're coming thick and fast for everybody. Anybody can beat anybody on any given day, because, you know, each team is on a level playing field from the time that they have to prepare for games and things like that. So it everybody's on a level playing field, you know, week in, week out, and, you know, it's a case that we target every game to win it. So far we've got 5 out of 6 points, so we're sitting in a good position. But look, there's 4 games to go.
Yeah, Keane, you're always thinking you see Dick Clerkin and Paul Finlay and these lads going away. I'm waiting for Monaghan to disappear, and they just don't seem to be going anywhere. You know, you actually won minor in 2013, Ulster, and an under 21 last year. So the idea that Monaghan are getting weaker, you know, because some players are going, Lennon went, like, you know, a lot of good players have gone, but Monaghan are there year after year. And some, like, when you talk and you're looking at the league, you might say, oh, Donegal, Roscommon, Monaghan will struggle, and Monaghan are always thrown into that mix. It must really annoy them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they've been extremely consistent over the last number of seasons. I remember my final year with Meath, we were playing them in Division 3, and to be fair, we would have seen ourselves as being on a level playing field with Monaghan at that time. Monaghan have kicked on massively from then. The players that they brought in at that stage, like Kieran Hughes, I think possibly that was his first season. Guys like that have developed, and they seem to be able to hold on to their players, and they continue to grow and develop. Like, Gavin Dugan wouldn't have played a huge amount of football over the last number of seasons. Certainly he wouldn't have been as prominent as he has been so far this season, but he's stepped up to the mark massively for Monaghan, yeah, being a huge influence on their game. So they're able to produce these players and continue to develop them, which is a massive thing. Other counties have a massive turnover in terms of their players. They might lose 8 or 10 players from year to year. Monaghan have kept that core group and have had great success. You know, they've been a match for Donegal, who, you know, have gone on to win All-Irelands and been very competitive, and Monaghan have been the kick of a ball away in quarter-final stages. So they've been a very, very consistent and solid team over the last 4 seasons, and, you know, this year they've started really, really well, and the really tough competitive games seem to suit them, seem to suit their character. They really rise to the challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Where is Dugan? Dugan's no spring chicken anyways. Like, I mean, he's played a couple of years, and McCarron's not young either. He's been riddled with injuries. So, like, I mean,
Gavin's not a spring chicken, then I'm not a spring chicken either, because he's the same age as me.
Well, you're not.
No, Gavin's been around the panel a long time, and Gavin's a quality footballer. The two of them, the boys you've mentioned there, Gavin and Jack McCarron, have had an awful run with injuries this last 2 years. Gavin had a surgery on his foot, on his ankle. He had hip trouble, you know, he had hamstring trouble. He just, one thing after another, and it's very much the same with Jack. Jack done his cruciate 2 years ago, was just coming back, and then done his ankle, had to go for surgery, and it was out for 6 months with it. So it's just right. been one thing after another with for the two boys. But you know, it's great to see them getting game time under the belt and you know, showing what they can do, because we've been playing without the two boys there effectively for the last 2 years, and it's for them more so than anybody else. Obviously it's great for the team, but for them personally, like, they've put in massive work to get back, and you know, at times they probably felt they were hitting their head up against a block wall, because it was just one thing after another coming at them. But at the minute they're getting a good run out of it, and touch wood that'll continue.
Yeah, definitely. And they're almost like two new signings, to use the soccer kind of analogy of it. But Jack McCarron's very important for you, really, isn't he? Because too often you're isolated in there, you know, and everybody says, like, I mean, you're shooting the lights out from the sideline, because, you know, that you're the only target in there. But now if you can have a foil, it makes your life easier. You can bring the two Hughes brothers to midfield, who are outstanding in that position, and suddenly you look at Monaghan and go, Jesus, there's midfield tied up, there's support for you know McManus, and it just, there's a huge freshness to you this year.
Yeah, well, look, it's all about trying to get new players into the panel, and obviously we have a number of the younger lads coming in as well, on the back of the under-21s and minors this last couple of years. So you're hopeful that will continue, and lads will come in and continue to make their mark. Like Connor McCarthy there, who has been in the panel last year and played a couple of games in the championship, would be hopeful that he will produce massive things for Monaghan as well going forward. So there is players coming through, and you know, it's just about getting them game time and getting them, and where better to get them game time than in Division 1 against the cream of the country, you know.
Do you tailor your training, right, okay, we're hitting the league hard this year, as in you'll do your really heavy work before Christmas and build up to the league so that you're hitting it hard? Because I noticed against Mayo in the first round of the league, like, you were flying it, and when you won that game you kind of celebrated it afterwards, you know what I mean? It was almost like you're hitting this harder maybe than Mayo on that night were.
Well, I suppose it doesn't take a genius to figure that out, because Mayo, you know, were in their team holiday for the first 2 weeks in January, so we knew that we were probably in a better position going into that game than Mayo were, obviously, because they had a lot less training done. So it was one, you know, maybe where we weren't expected to win it, but we definitely felt it was a chance for us to get 2 points on the board early, particularly because Mayo were in the position they were in, having not trained as much, and we have had a chance to get a lot more work done. So just it was common sense to think that we could pull 2 points out of it, you know.
Yeah, that's one thing about the league, you know, you have different teams and different trajectories and different kind of fitness levels, especially like Dublin are doing incredibly well despite the fact they were on the holiday, but they just seem to be an exception to the rule.
Well, they've only won one as well.
Well, that's true. Yeah, they're on an awful run.
Actually, Dublin are finished, let's just write them off now. But the thing that I always think about Monaghan, I know they've obviously kicked on in the last while, but over the last 10-15 years, especially coming from Ulster, like, Monaghan are just a team that you feared going into. Like, you'd never write them off. They always had this real dogged attitude, and it was lined the whole way through their team. And now you look at the two Hugheses in midfield, like, it's destructive in there. Like, two absolute bulls, but they're proper players. Like, both of them could play full forward if you wanted. And then they've always had this sort of springboard coming from halfback. But I know we have this sort of narrative that it's like, oh, you know, we're using Connor too much. Or I don't think you could use Connor too much, but I think they do have so many other options, like the way they come from down the field. Yeah.
You often make a good point on that, actually. Oh, they're too dependent on Connor McManus. Why the hell wouldn't they be?
Yeah, exactly,
like, I mean, it'd be worse if they were underusing Connor McManus. But, like,
I don't want to wax lyrical too much about him because he's sitting beside me.
Yeah, he's going red over there now.
I feel like this is a setup. So, but like, honestly, they have so much other platforms to come from as well, and that. You know, that's sometimes Connor gets a handy score the odd time as well, then, because you have two of the most mobile players now in Ireland in midfield. Like, that's frightening. And then like, their halfbacks have always, like, ever since you've seen the likes of Damien Freeman coming through, and old Monaghan always seem to be able to create these players that could just bomb up and down the pitch, and that's still the way it is.
Yeah. 1 point from play for the Kerry forward line, and we were talking last week about Geaney O'Donoghue, and Jack Savage looks a great little industrious player, smart. 1 point from play you kept them to. Like, your defence is incredible, Connor. Like, I mean, they always give you a chance, like your full back line especially.
Yeah, well, look at you don't want to be blowing your own trumpet too much. It's very early in the year.
Yeah.
We've only played 3 games, so we have to be realistic here and not get carried away. But
this is on the evidence of the last few years as well.
The boys don't give much away there, and it can be tricky enough at times in training now. And you've a couple of the Wileys and Finty Kelly and these boys clipping the ribs off you. But
who do you mark in training?
You can be marking any of them. You can be marking Finty. You can be marking Drew, Ryan, Collie Walsh, any of them. You don't get an easy ride from any of them. Now,
I had Ryan Wiley, I would hate to mark him. Like, he's just has everything. Like, his strength of him, he's glue tight. You just can't seem to get around him. Like, I mean, if you call backs and forwards and I was walking into it, I'd be like, oh, we do another drill or two or something. Like, I mean, but he's just like, he's a sensational player.
Yeah, the two Wileys are, they're in great form at the minute. They were very good yesterday, you know, and, but to be fair, I suppose if you were to ask the two lads, there's been a lot of work done defensively, you know, and trying to keep teams out and you know, working as a unit more so than as a defensive line, and we try not to isolate the defence as much as we can, you know. So look at it. Three games in, it's going well, but it's a long way to go, you know.
Yeah. Are you working on anything different this year? Like, I mean, your half forward line is a little bit more like footballing, might you say. You know what I mean? There seems to be a lot more offence in your forward line than maybe your half forward line in years gone by would have been pure work, you know, well, lot of workers.
You're always trying to improve, and that's, you know, year on year, you're always trying to bring something new to your game and trying to improve things. And obviously, you know, you look at stats and everything else from the year gone by, and you say, right, well, there's what we got, there's what we conceded, there's what we scored, and things like that. And you're always trying to build on what you scored, and then trying to reduce what you conceded. So it's just a case of working on the training field. And in fairness, we do, you know, we do quite a bit on that side of things and trying to improve. And it's, you know, as I say, so far it's going well, but you know, there's a long way for us to go, and when we would feel we have improvements to make as well going forward, you know.
Yeah, how important is that for Malachy to bring something new every year and not let it get stale? Like, I mean, is he constantly freshening it up? Because
even just by the freshen up that he made in the backroom team, like, and you know, we had a great backroom team there this last 3 or 4 years, but it's just a case that Malachy would have felt that he needed to bring something out fresh, bring something new in. He brought Colin McAree in, who was with Scotstown this last number of years, and also brought Owen Lennon in, who was obviously soldiered with Monaghan for so long. He had to retire at the start of last year through injury, and he wasn't involved in any shape or form last year. And then he actually was with Latin, managed Latin last year, and done a great job with them.
Nice.
And he came back in with us. So, you know, just by doing that, Malachy has freshened things up and added a wee bit to the backroom team. Maybe takes the onus off him a wee bit and handing it over to the lads as well, you know.
Yeah, I think that's important. Like, I mean, you weren't around for the Sean Boylan years, but I don't know how he did it year after year, you know, just keeping them motivated, keeping them going when it's the same voice. Like, I mean, there's only so much you can say to a team without kind of repeating yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very important. It's freshening it up and getting the different voices in, changing selectors, changing your coach, stuff like that can have a huge impact. It's small things sometimes can make a huge difference within a squad. There can be people in the background team that don't necessarily, they're maybe not a selector, not a coach, but they're helping out with logistics or something, and they can be very popular amongst the group. And sometimes a subtle change in roles like that can even change the atmosphere of the group, because you're together so often that, you know, somebody that's a great bit of crack there can lighten the mood sometimes when it needs to be done, can just change the dynamic, because players are under an awful lot of pressure, managers are under an awful lot of pressure to deliver results, and it's the small little things sometimes can make a difference. But I have to say, Malachy Rourke has done an incredible job with Monaghan over the last number of years, in terms of they're just so competitive in every single game that they play. It's very rare that they're not at the pitch of it.
It's that consistency of performance, you know, of the being at the right pitch, not kind of letting that drop off.
Yeah, well, not being overhyped and doing stupid stuff and not being flat. I mean, I'm sure Connor will probably be able to point to some games where maybe they weren't at their best, but they're so well organised at the back. The discipline is so good. The cover at the back, the work rate of their half forward line, and just the way they're able to kind of their man to man marking and their matchups is very rarely gets that wrong, and that has allowed Monaghan to nullify a lot of teams. And look, even just look at the weekend. I mean, you had James O'Donoghue 3 from frees, Gainey 3 from frees, nothing from play from those two lads. Like, that is a massively good day's work from your defensive unit.
Now, Gainey missed an open goal.
He did miss an open goal. But to be fair, the cover was coming across. And
I know that was actually a good cover, because he made it hard on him.
A player like him, when he misses a chance like that, it's because he's a little bit rattled. It's because he's maybe had a couple of balls into him, he's been rattled a couple of times, he's maybe been dispossessed, he's been beaten to a ball or two, he's not getting it all his own way, so he's snatching at a chance like that because he thinks, Jesus, this is the only chance I'm getting here, I need to stick this, and he just rushes the shot. So that would be my take on it. I think it was a gilt-edged chance, but he missed it because of the pressure, not just on that particular moment, but the build up throughout. You know, I think I've played in a lot of games like that where you just know you're slightly under pressure. You know that you have to get the shot away really, really fast. And unless you're on your game, maybe he missed a couple of chances, mishandled the ball, it just can upset your rhythm. I'm sure Connor can testify to that too.
Yeah, I was actually saw some comments from Rory Gallagher, and this is in the context of someone asking him about Donegal being so defensive. And he said, look, we tried to leave a full forward line. You need to ask Dublin about their Philly McMahon and, you know, their cornerbacks attacking. I was up in Breffni Park last year when you were playing Donegal. You were actually on the full back line, Mark and Paddy McGrath. Like, I mean, this is, must be just poxy. Like, how can you not give that responsibility or say, here, pick him up there, I'm not going on. You ended up right on the 6 yard box.
Yeah, look, you know, that's the way the game has gone, and cornerbacks getting involved in the play. And obviously, we have our own cornerbacks too who would pop up in them places too. And obviously, as a corner forward, you know, you're not as effective down in your full back line as you are in your full forward line, so you try and avoid that if you can. But there's just times where you simply can't. You know,
how can you avoid it? By just giving a working half forward the heads up,
trying to pass it off or whatever the case is.
Heads up, I'm not going to be tracking today, so heads up for you.
Listen, when you play with about 14 men behind the ball, I mean, you're allowed to have one lad up there, aren't you?
You kind of let him off. But it is, there are points where you just have to go with him, and then you find yourself stranded back there and you're gassed out, and then you have to make your way home.
Yeah, and you mightn't be much addition, but look at it's unfortunately as a forward and as a corner forward, it's part and parcel of the game now. You know, you have to muck in, and like, I'm not the only corner forward who finds himself in the full back line by any manner of means. So it's just a case that you try and avoid it where possible, but there's times in the game where you simply have to get back and cover, because look at, if I was to leave a man off, all cornerbacks are fit to score now, so he's going to get a chance from 25-30 yards out. He's going to pop it, you know.
Yeah, that another thing on that is, like, you're an out and out corner forward, you generally don't move out from there, you're a specialist. Like, I mean, would you be like, this is in the context of running back and being tired or whatever, would you do tailored training on different lines of the field, or I mean, would you do all your stamina training together? Like, would you be supposed to be doing more explosive stuff for your breaks? Or
no, generally not. We would, you know, obviously there's tailored bits and pieces, but as a general rule, we would all train together, you know.
Okay.
And if one man has to run the 400s, every man has to do it, you know, and that's just
the way the game's gone. Yeah, I suppose you all need to be the same.
Yeah, that's it. Like, as I say, cornerbacks find themselves up in the forward line as much now, and I know if any of our cornerbacks got up and got a chance from 20-25 yards out, you'd be fairly confident that they'd stick it, you know. So you have to take that approach with the rest.
Yeah, so backs and forwards, the backs aren't even in behind the goals anymore, are they? Has it all changed here? What's going on?
Like, get their own balls behind the goals and stuff now.
Sounds like a different game. I'm just glad I'm out now. That's it.
The funny thing is, there's nothing worse if you're McGrath in that instance and you go up the field. Nothing worse than if you look around and your man hasn't bothered tracking you and he's still standing there in a 21, and you're thinking, you lazy little shit, and you have to go the whole way back, terrified that they might actually get the ball then and pick up a handy score.
Well, that's the bluff that you can often do.
It's a risk.
But if he scores, you're gone. There's a huge game of cat and mouse that's being played there.
That big long wait, everyone's thinking, who's marking him? And then he's running the whole way back up to Conor McManus and like, oh, he's marking him. Cursing
you're okay, it's a podcast.
I'd say Conor's cute enough to go on to the spare defender, so when anyone looks down the field, he sees McManus has his man anyway.
Across onto the sweeper. That's the clever one. How much work did you do upper body, Conor, before we let you go? Because, like, I mean, there's been a very obvious change in your physique, and I don't know, do you wear shoulder pads, or that's just you're doing a lot of dumbbells? But how you've put an awful lot of work in, and you've had to, really, because you need to be able to win your own ball.
Yeah, I suppose it's again, and I suppose when Malachy came in 2013, it was just a case that he got everybody working hard, and everybody pulling in the one direction. And it's not that we weren't doing that before, but I suppose when you get a taste of success, and which we did early on in that, and it was a Division 3 league, but it was a springboard for us, and you know, you just feel that you have to do the work, and you have to do as much work away from the field as you do on the field now, and that's just the way the game has gone. So, you know, you do, and I focused on it a wee bit maybe more than others because I had to. You know, it's not a case that I just decided I was going to do it. It was a case that needs must. So you get in, and look at, you enjoy the gym work now, and it's a case that, you know, everybody does it. Every GA intercounty, I'm no different than anybody else in that regard. So You just get in, you get it done, you do your two or three sessions a week, and it's, you know, you enjoy it, you know.
And what did you focus on? Did you focus on putting on muscle and a lot of weight, or did you concentrate on your upper body, or, you know, what did you focus on the most?
I just did what I was told.
Okay.
You know, we have an excellent strength and conditioning coach there. Ryan Porter's very good. But yeah, you know, your upper body obviously is important, particularly when you're inside and you're marking, you know, tight, sticky corner backs and things of that there. So you have to be fit to try and win your own ball and hold it up and things of that. So yeah, you do focus on upper body and trying to just bulk out a wee bit, you know.
Yeah, and would you put much weight on of muscle?
I don't know what it's weight on. I don't know if it's all muscle or what it is. But it's, you know, you're just trying to stay around the 13 and a half mark is what you know, in terms of weight. But you know, it does help. It definitely does help.
Yeah, but that's coming up from maybe 12. You mustn't have been much more than 12 stone at one time.
Earlier on my intercounty career, I wouldn't have been. And you know, I was playing earlier on in my career. I was playing wing back, where you could sort of stay away from the hustle and bustle, if you like, you know. But when you're inside, you can't avoid it, you know.
Yeah, well, that's it. Come here, listen. Thanks very much for calling in for us. You can sing because you are top of the league, but let's not get carried away here because it is very early. No. He's blushing almost. We're talking about.
More singing than I am.
Listen, we'll be back in a minute with some analysis. Dira, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah. Why is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, that's a couple of things I wanted to cover there before we got nicely surprised by Conor McManus dropping in to see us. Was Pat's plan last night on League Sunday? He said, and I quote, "I think we're cutting off our nose to spite our face by taking the game out of the shop window for 5 months. I think we need more rather than less." Pat Spillane is advocating a longer intercounty season. Like, I mean, he sat there and he said this so definitely, and Michael Lester just sat there. Just sat there with a smile on his face and didn't even so much as challenge the man on the fact that we already have a 9-month season. Everyone's complaining about it being too long. Pat Spillane is coming out with a crazy thing off the top of his head, and the presenter of the show isn't even questioning on it.
He backed it up, in fairness, by saying rugby's sexy and rugby's hot and rugby's in. Like, that was his argument for making the GA season longer. But
the gas thing about it is, he says, he used a rugby example. Sure, the Six Nations, the big competition, is only 7 weeks in rugby. Yeah. Like, it's club rugby that dominates.
The league is still going on as well. The league's doing hard for itself.
They take a break and play the actual flagship international season in 7 weeks. Our big season, the flagship one, goes on for 9 months, Brad, and you want to make it longer.
I did think, like, looking at Pat's plan, it reminded me of these people you were seeing in Congress all weekend, where he just seemed a little out of touch, and there's such a disconnect now between these guys and people who are actually playing the game and running the game, and like people who are involved in it, like day to day. He just seemed so out of touch. But that's why it was great to have Rory Cavan on there, who was actually talking a lot of sense and actually speaking for the majority of the people who don't seem to have a voice at the
moment. Now Rory was good. Like, I mean, Rory was good. He's very kind. Rory's not a showman. But what disappointed me was Pat got to speak, and Keen, you were talking about this too, that Pat got to speak about Donegal, and we heard very little from Rory about his own bloody county, which he would have been an excellent expert on.
Yeah, that was a little bit disappointing, because I felt we could have got a great insight from Rory on Donegal, and even going back in terms of the change of management. Like, there could have been an opportunity to get in-depth information and some real interesting stuff out of him when he was there. Unfortunately, we didn't get that, but for me, that would have been interesting.
Would have been massively interesting. Rory, tell us about the changeover between McGuinness and Gallagher, and, you know, how, you know, the players took to it, etc., and what he wanted to change.
Pat Spillane found a player. He found Ryan McHugh.
Ryan McHugh. Wait till you have a look at this fella.
Rory Cavanagh wouldn't have thought that.
This lad is a hidden gem now that I'm just bringing you. But anyways, look, I just thought we had to mention that. One other thing, lads, is the Caltra Ultras. What do you think about the Caltra Ultras?
You're going to have to bring me up to speed on
what
this.
What do you think about the Cantra? Do you not know the Cooler Ultras?
Oh, Jesus. The Cooler Ultras, yeah. The lads with no tops on.
Cantra is Michael Meehan's club in Bloody Galway.
Yeah.
Cooler Ultras, then. I can't even cut that out. I think they're a breath of fresh air to the game. Fantastic group of young fellas. It might be a little bit soccery, but look, brilliant atmosphere at the games. They're young fellas. They could be out on the street corner dealing drugs, and they're, they're going to match it.
Well, not dealing drugs and docky.
No, absolutely not. No,
Class A is no out there.
I like that. It's a bit of a, it reminded me a bit of the colleges, the fans that go to the colleges games.
So it you did,
have like St. Pat's and Navan, where I went. They have in my time it wasn't as good as they have it now. But you know, they're at the same thing. There's a gang of them go down and they're chanting and singing, and it does provide a bit of an atmosphere and a bit of crack to the whole thing. So yeah, it's to be welcomed.
Cool Ultras, more of that please.
We had this with Austin Stacks a couple of years ago.
We did.
And Slough Neil actually faced them in the semi-final. What do they call themselves, the Rockets or something? Or
I don't know what name. Billy Sheehan, actually, ex-Leach player, used to be the ring leader with the with the megaphone at the front.
Oh yeah, that's right. But it was one of my favourite moments. It was actually in Port Leash. It was the All-Ireland semi-final and they were making so much noise. They met in the centre of the town. They all go there to meet and they walk down together with their drums and horns and whatever. Megaphones. And making so much noise, it was amazing. Like, Stacks were out warming up, and then Slough Neil came out, and you had a pocket of about maybe 200 Slough Neil people at most, and they just drowned them out, and it was only for 10 seconds or whatever, but it was just, it was like they put everything into that cheer so they could finally be heard over these lunatics who were making all that racket.
Yeah, but look, okay, listen, well, we've probably given them maybe a little bit more time than they were. The bloody Cantra Ultras. I'll never live that one down. Anyways, lads, Donegal Dublin was the big game that most people were watching yesterday, and like, again, we're not going to massively read too much into it because it was Jesus, the conditions were terrible. Watching that game thinking, how the hell would you be able to play as a forward? Although McHugh, who's a light little forward, played very well, and you can actually see a bit of a turn of pace. Michael Murphy is back to his very, very best. Isn't it great to see?
Yeah, it's great. Look, he's a class act, and he's probably been struggling with injury over the last number of years. I know he had a bad ankle injury and things like that. So it's good to see him getting a lot of game time and just moving more freely. He just looks like he's moving freely and he's more comfortable in himself.
Yeah, he got a head of steam up a few times yesterday, which we haven't seen in a long time. We actually see him doing a lot more work tackling and staying around the middle, but he's like bombing forward. He's impossible to stop.
He's impossible to stop, and he does actually have a great turn of pace when he comes onto a ball,
massive.
And he can absolutely breeze through people with his power. I mean, how do you stop him if he's coming at you? You're just not stopping
him. Foul him.
The only way he can be stopped is to be dragged down. But it was a sort of an intriguing game. It was bizarre in many respects that, once again, Dublin, you know what I mean, they just seem to have this capacity to have a few moments of madness. And look, it's maybe a little bit harsh to say that about them, because it was probably very good play from Donegal. The first goal was reasonably decent goal, a decent move put together.
Yeah.
Little bit lucky in the end, but to concede a goal, you know, within 30 seconds of that is... it's kind of unforgivable from a Dublin perspective. You would think a team of their experience would have, you know, taken a foul or fouled one of the Donegal lads to not concede such a goal. Like, if an inexperienced team conceded a goal, two goals like that in quick succession, you say, oh, very inexperienced, they don't know how to win.
Yeah.
So it's kind of bizarre to see Dublin have these moments of madness.
I think that's up to Cluxton. Like, I mean, their captain. Now, this has happened twice. Look, we won't say that Dublin have a weakness when they concede a goal yet, but it's happened twice, and it's a matter of Cluxton not to do, maybe send the next one down the middle. You have Fenton there. Let's not be going too clever when you concede a goal at any level. There was 10,000 people at that game. The crowd were you know, all over the place. Can scramble your brain just a little bit and go, right, calm down. I'm sending this long to Fenton. If we don't win it, we've enough bodies back. And just don't send that one immediately later. Too clever.
Well, it was amazing to see that they were so badly exposed after Donegal did turn the ball over. I think Ryan McHugh actually turned it over, and it was a great bit of skill along the sideline, because he was lying on the ground. He managed to chip it up and flick it back to one of his teammates, which was pretty impressive. But even with one kick pass after that pass from McHugh, one kick pass, and Donegal were
inside,
almost bearing down a goal with 2-on-1 at Cluxton, and Cluxton did really well coming off his line to smother the first attempt. But where were the Dublin cover players? Had they moved out the field expecting Cluxton to go long or what? But they were very, very open, and it reinforces, I suppose, the view that's out there that, you know, if you can pressurise the Dublin kick out and win it, you have they're wide open for exploitation, yeah, shall we say.
Is this not the idea, though, lads? Like, I mean, is this not, have we not got enough evidence now to say that Dublin don't lose to defensive teams? Who's the last team that's actually gone for Dublin? Kerry did for that small little part of that game, but Kerry were playing within themselves, didn't really go for it. Dublin are only human, lads. They're not bloody 15 he-men. Like, I mean, they can make mistakes. Their full-back line tries to get out in front of you, so they're susceptible to the ball over the top, but they never get caught on it because they've got 3-1 back there because the other team they're playing is so panicked about. Therefore, I'd love to see a team just go all out 15-15, well, and like for 10 minutes of the game at least.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at it, it's very, very difficult for anybody, for the threatening ball over the top to be there against Dublin, because teams are gone so deep that the kick pass is coming from way too far. And it's actually very easy for Dublin's full back line because they have such pace. They play a yard in front or on the shoulder, and the only option is the ball in front for the forward.
Because there's no half forward line.
There's no link. So that actually makes it very, very easy for them to defend in some respects, because there's no ball over the top. The most when defenders are in real trouble, when they say have pace, you know, these guys that love to win the ball out in front, when they're turning facing their own goal, they're in massive trouble. And when you can change direction quite quickly, I've marked these guys and I know that where if you have to race 40-50 metres out in a straight line with them, they're quick enough and they're strong enough, they're going to beat you, they're going to be right on your shoulder. If you have them one on one where you can step in behind them, maybe make a little jink left or right, and it's a little pop pass into you, listen, you get away from them, you're 5 or 10 yards away from them in the blink of an eye, and they're not that good at that type of defending, whereas they're brilliant for the ball in front.
No defender is. And this is the thing, the last team that did this to them was Kerry, when De Gooch played centre forward and he was treading those balls. There's no one can mark those balls. But the problem is, even Kerry now have gone with the work in half forward line. Paul Murphy's not going to give those balls, and they've gone back that they've no half forward line. So like you said, the Johnny Cooper, Philip McMahon are gambling out in front, and your full forward line is the two lads that are in there are living off bloody scraps. And that's like, there has to be, like, teams need to wise up that this is not working.
And do you know what the big thing is? Dublin are not really experienced with game management. I mean, yes, they've come through a lot of tight games, but they've never really faced a side who've hit a purple patch against them. They did against Kerry, got rescued with half time, but they rarely face a team who hits purple patches and then they have to come out of it, because the teams are always so reserved and are sinking back. So they never actually put Dublin on the ropes. And you look at what happens, like Cluxton has a meltdown against Kerry, even against Donegal. It's like, get the ball. Instead of just relaxing, slowing the bloody thing down, pretending to be injured, they've scored a goal, we're on top, let's just cut their momentum and then we'll play it out at our own time. Like, but it's just the absolute panic. And again, they get rescued at half time. What happened in 2014? Ryan McHugh goal, and they rarely face that sort of momentum anymore, because teams aren't going at them, and they don't seem to be able to have an answer to come out of a purple patch apart from half time.
That's the thing. Well, they do get saved, but like, I mean, the idea, Dublin just have it so sewn up, lads, because they've such a fear factor in their forwards, and I don't think their forwards as good as maybe 2 years ago. They've such a fear factor of the forwards, teams are panicked about not playing the sweeper. They give them Keane O'Sullivan, you're screwed. They want to work their half forward line back to cover to cut down the space. Immediately Dublin's full back line is under, is the advantage is to them straight away, because they're going to play you from the front. See, even against Mayo, when Johnny Cooper's playing Andy Moran, we talked about this on an earlier show, how to mark Andy Moran. Just mark him from the front. You can do that when you've no half forward line. I remember playing full forward so many times, shouting at the centre forward, come back, I can't make runs from here, he's marking me from the front, I'm gone, come back, let it go to you, then I can make a side to side run. But if there's no half forward line, the side to side run's gone, because they can't kick it that far. The only hope you have is to make a horrible run right or left of them and hope you can beat them as in a race. And like, teams need to wise up to that.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is that Dublin's best line is their half back line most of the time, when they have the full complement. So they're so dangerous from there. That's nearly why teams are leaving defensive numbers back, because their forward line, realistically, if you look at their six forwards that played yesterday against Donegal, if I was a manager of an opposing team, I wouldn't be bothered with a sweeper against that forward line.
Wouldn't put the fear of God into you. No,
particularly if I was managing the Donegal defence, because I would have enough faith in them 1-1. Look, it's a high risk game, but you're going out to win the match, not to keep the score down. So, from that perspective, you wouldn't be overly fearful of them at the minute. Now, obviously, when they have the full complement, they're much more potent up there. But if you have a mobile midfield that can deal with the likes of Fenton, who's really been the game breaker for them in the last number of seasons, and their half back line is the problem, because it's very, very difficult for any half forward if he's doing a, say, a man-to-man marking job on somebody like Jack McCaffrey, the onus is on you to give a dig out to your own midfield and winning breaks, and then you have these guys just breaking at such pace that if they get a half a yard, you don't get back. Yeah. And unless you have cover defenders back there, he will run the length of the pitch and create that overlap. So that's where the danger is. But I still see no reason why teams cannot leave two men in their full forward line at all times and occupy three Dublin defenders. Yeah. And have that link. Why not play with four forwards? It just is beyond me how teams are going out all the time and not playing with enough bodies up the field. Three to four forwards up the pitch at all times, fair enough, there might be a bit of a rotation between the guys that are dropping deep and coming forward, but like, I just think you're conceding the impetus way too much to Dublin. Dublin own possession, they pass the ball over and back, they work their chances quite well and clip them over the bar. They never really looked like they were going to break through the Donegal line yesterday. Donegal were really, really well organised from that perspective.
Well organised in that kind of weather, you know, it's easy enough.
But they were never a threat.
No.
I mean, they went for, what, 25 minutes in the first half and about 25 minutes in the second half without scoring.
Dublin were by far the better team. Like, I mean, they were the only team kind of really looking to win it in a lot of ways, you know, and I know there's the caveat that it was a very inexperienced team of Donegal, but they're at home, and Rory Gallagher said after the game that he wanted to win it. Didn't really look like he wanted to win it, and he said.
But he won't care, because they get a draw against the All Ireland champions, unbeaten in 32 games. He can sell this whatever way he wants to his own players. They're going to believe it, because we're after drawing with Donegal, we could have beaten them, or we are after drawing with Dublin, we could have beaten them, maybe we should have beaten them, and that'll give them confidence. You know, he's trying to instill belief in them. So he did, in fairness to him, change his tactics from the Kerry match. He went a lot more defensive.
Yeah.
He kept them right in the game, and look, they could have snuck the game. They mightn't have deserved it, but they could have.
Mm. Yeah, and he's making the excuse that their full forward line had to follow the Philly McMahons of this world. And there is the attacking.
It's not an excuse, set.
But there's not even the excuse. Well, he explained why they had so many men back, because they were following the full back lines. And the full back lines attacking puts a weird dynamic on the game. It kind of messes the whole shape of the whole field up, and suddenly the game looks a lot more defensive than the two managers necessarily might have wanted.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But what also happens is, if you are playing as a full forward and the opposition's cornerback runs up the field there, particularly a game like yesterday, Donegal already have 12 or 13 men behind
the ball. You could nearly chance them.
You don't need to go back, because the gaps are all plugged up anyway. I mean, if a Dublin cornerback is going up the pitch, he's only going up to get in the way of his own forwards anyway.
Yeah.
Like, most of the time what they did was they went up as far as midfield, and the Dubs are good. The Dubs don't crowd themselves out. They stay very, very wide. They rarely break in behind. So, look, they have to go as far as midfield, but when they're not in the game, sometimes you just have to take a chance that your team are going to turn the ball over and you can be an outlet. You know, some guys have made a career out of playing that sort of a role. The ball is turned over and they get it on the loose and they break forward and get a score.
Somebody has
to take a chance.
I remember Alan Brogan always telling me, because I used to have these issues running after fellas in full-back lines, and I just did it. But I remember Alan Brogan telling me, Pillar Caffrey told him, under no circumstances do you follow a man back like that. I don't want you gassing yourself out. Go with him a little bit, give him off to somebody else and get back in. Your man won't do it that often if Alan Brogan is not following and waiting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want to be bloody sure you're getting that 1-2, because sometimes you'll make that run, you'll give the ball, they won't give you the bloody 1-2, you're stranded up there. You know, it is that game of cat and mouse like we were talking about with Connor.
Yeah, I mean, and Cian's right about playing the four forwards. I mean, if I was managing a team, even Donegal, I mean, I would set them up and have two men, at least one, on the 45. Like, you are not to come back. I don't care where your man goes, you're that outlet on the 45, and you have two men inside. Whatever, if you have two men on the 45, great, but there's enough players there. There's two half forwards coming back, two midfielders in a place like Ballybuffet. That's taking up a lot of space, and like, they're not going to keep coming forward if those outlets are getting the ball in the 45 once you turn it over. But you're right, the problem was then, like, with Dublin coming forward with their full back line, then Donegal were coming forward with Ryan McHugh and Frank McGlynn, and it just became a running game.
Yeah.
But I do buy that Rory Gallagher went out to win the match. He probably just thought, if we can keep Dublin to 9 or 10 scores, that's our best way of winning. But then the last 30 seconds was diabolical. Like, they had a chance to go win the match. Like, they weren't going to lose it, but they were just so afraid of losing the ball that they... they didn't even bother taking a shot when they had that chance to go and win. And that's probably not Gallagher's fault.
I thought Martin O'Reilly had the chance to maybe shoot, but I think you're against the wind, it's hard enough to get that shot off. You know, like, I mean, I'd have a little bit of sympathy. I thought Riley, when he took the ball at pace, could have flicked that over, and he chose not to, and then he went out to the wing, and then Murphy recycled it, I think, back out. So if Riley hadn't just done it that one time, you know, he had that chance. Lads, I want to talk about Brian Fenton, and look, everything's been said about Brian Fenton. He's just like, he's an incredible, incredible player. But what impressed me yesterday, and it's very obvious, the amount of foot passes he plays into his forward line. Like, he's constantly trying to do the positive thing with the ball. You'll very rarely see Brian Fenton get on the ball and do what Kieran Kilkenny does and hand pass it laterally or go backwards. A lot of going backwards ball, because Dublin actually have three on the outside, and then, you know, they have obviously got a system of how to think this is going to break down. But Fenton is constantly looking for a kick pass, and I thought he found O'Gara a few times. I thought O'Gara did well. I know it's his time of year kind of thing, but he did well, and he's an option for Dublin, O'Gara, and if Fenton's looking for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I think O'Gara, he won a couple of great balls, kind of crossfield balls played into him. And in fairness to Fenton, he is a good kick passer to ball, and he does get his head up and try to deliver the ball. And
that's a
very positive thing, because there's a number of players who play in that middle sector of the field, and they drive you absolutely bananas when you're playing in the forward line, because every time they get it, their head down, they always take two, you know, a player or two when they don't need them, and they're not actually looking for that pass. Fenton, to his credit, and David Moran is the same for Kerry, when they get the ball in the middle of the field, when they get their hand, their head is straight up. They're looking to see, how dangerous can I play this pass? Can I give the 30 or 40 metre kick pass, or do I have to cycle it? And if it, look, it's to his credit, that's why he's as good as he is, that's why he's having such a big impact on games, and why Dublin have improved since he's gone into midfield for him.
I hadn't noticed it as much as how well he does use that ball. Like, I mean, I know he does, like, he's brilliant in the air and he's great on the ground, but I hadn't realised how much, or maybe this is something new to his game, that he actually foot passes an awful lot. Like, and that's a huge, it's going to be a huge plus for Dublin, there's no doubt about that.
I think he's got everything. I think no one in Ireland can touch him at the minute. Like, he's, and the way he fetches the ball, the way he wins bricks, as soon as he gets it, bang, he's looking forward. If there's no pass on, he can go, he can gallop, and then the way he gets back, like, he does, he's the complete player for modern day football. Like, if you were going to design a player to play right now, you would just come up with him.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. What about Donegal, lads, quickly? Because, like, I mean, they're almost unrecognisable to the team that we would have known the last 2 or 3 years. I know Spillane was talking them up like they were great last night. Like, I mean, there was a lot of the game I wasn't impressed with them, if I'm being honest. Like, they went through such spells of not getting a look in of a score, and then no options when they're attacking, absolutely nothing. And then they get two goals to put a complexion on the game that genuinely I don't think they deserved. Is that fair, or am I being harsh on them? Now, I want to put the context of them being a very young team and inexperienced and up against, Dublin's full team.
I think you're being a little bit harsh on them, considering that they're missing Paddy McBrearty as well, who's been their kind of main go-to forward for the last number of seasons. And in fairness, due to the, I suppose, the inexperience of the team at the minute and the players that they don't have available, it's meant that Michael Murphy has to spend nearly all of the game out around the middle of the field, as opposed to being maybe that threat or that foil inside for an inside forward. So they didn't really have any sort of a big target man to play to for a lot of the game in their full forward line, which at this time of the season can make you look like you're playing very lateral, and you can't break the gain line because the ground is so heavy.
And the pitch too,
the pitch was a disaster. I mean, like, I wouldn't read too much into that. I think you're being a little bit harsh on them. I think I was quite impressed. I know they were well beaten by Kerry, but they showed enough signs for me that day that I think they have a lot of talent there. Like, a lot of talent. Some of those guys that have come into the team have really impressed me with their athleticism, their pace, their strength, their power. And a really good footballing ability as well. Good kick passer to the ball. I know you don't see much of it yesterday with conditions the way they were, but that Kieran Thompson, I think he's a really has the potential to
looks
be
like
a really top class
real natural
player.
Yeah, he looks like
Quaylon Ward at centre back as well, he's a great bit of go to him, great bit of bite to him. He was corner back against Kerry, and he was, you know, steep learning curve that day, but again, he came out with enough ball against top quality forwards that he certainly has a place at the top level. And I mean, for these guys to be coming in and playing against Dublin, playing against Kerry, that can only bring them forward. Like, they're going to develop a huge amount between now and when the Ulster Championship starts. And if they can get their injury situation right and keep Michael Murphy, you know, ticking over nicely, I think they're still going to be a massive handful for everybody.
Yeah, no, I think they'll still be in the mix. I can't move on here, Keane, without talking to you about Meath. what the hell is going on with Meath? Because, like, I mean, you know, you have Andy McEntee, who did so well with Ballyboden. And look, I'm not doing this, oh, this is a disaster yet, because you look at Tipperary last year and they had a terrible league. And, like, even my own County Laois, bottom of Division 3, it looks like it is a disaster, but they've a lot of injuries as well. And maybe they're working on things that they're trying to get right. But, like, I mean, I suppose the same as Laois, on paper, Meath look like they're not going well. Like, I mean, they got hammered at home by Kildare, beat Derry, Colin Rourke says, the worst Derry team he's ever seen, who then beat Kildare. It's just, this is so confusing, all these results. But then going up to Down, who looked like no-hopers, you know, and losing again. And it's pretty disappointing. I think they were third favourites to get to win the division at the start of the year.
Yeah, well, look, it's a very, very disappointing result, particularly. I think you have to look at the context of the result, in that Down hadn't won in a number of seasons, so they were at a very low ebb. Traditionally, Meath playing in Newry has always been a very tough place to go. It's very rare that Meath have won games up there in the league, historically. So look, at that's one side of it. But Down, there was a massive fight back from Down, given that they needed the result. I thought they performed quite well, but Meath were the architects of their own downfall, really. I mean, to concede the goal after about 15 seconds in the game, Paddy Rourke didn't cover himself in great glory, nor did the full back line. I mean, it's a sort of goal you should never concede, a free dropping short that gets flicked to the net. It's just a disastrous start. And that's the second time. Against Kildare, it was the same thing. Conceded a goal.
Is that a weakness of Paddy O'Rourke's?
I don't think, it wasn't really his ball to come for, but he just seemed to be caught on his heels when the flick did come. Like, the ball didn't exactly bullet past him. Look, you could say it was maybe it was just placed perfectly in the corner, but either way, a very disappointing goal for me to concede. And then they conceded a couple of scores where they lost the ball in their own half back line and full back line. That just gave Down the lead, and Down were able to just hold on to it, hit Mead on the counter attack, soak up the pressure, and that was the tail of the match. Like, Meath could have easily won the game, but yeah, they kind of ran out of ideas, didn't have that the punching power to get ahead of Down up front.
Was Graham Riley in the corner and O'Sullivan in centre forward? I know Sullivan played so well against Kildare centre half forward. He was a 2-2 he got, but against Derry. But I mean, Graham Riley has to start at that position, no? Because I'm sure Graham wouldn't thank Andy for playing him corner forward and having a man marker follow him when he drifts out.
Well, yeah, that's the point I was going to make, is that there is a massive difference. Even though you might be playing with, say, two guys up, you know, maybe Killian O'Sullivan and Graham Riley would be the obvious two that would be sort of that link role we were talking about between the half forward line and full forward line, and having great pace coming off the shoulder. But there is a massive difference between being picked at 11 and being picked at 13.
Huge difference.
And it happened to me on a good few occasions as
and
well.
Me,
I was
yeah.
bloody picked in the corner to come out the field, and you have this lad who's stuck to you like a leech. And
then they said to you, you have a free role.
Yeah.
I clearly don't have a free role. I've actually been man marked all over the field, and it's horrible.
Yeah, and it's worse. You're actually worse off being man marked in that zone, because particularly if you are used to playing in the corner and you come out the field, because your angles of running are slightly different, the timing of your run, you can just find it very difficult to get on the ball. So I think from Graham Riley's perspective and Killian O'Sullivan, they just maybe need to maybe pick one of them at a number 10 and bring him in, so he's potentially initially marking a wing back to cause a bit of confusion. But either way, Killian O'Sullivan was actually taken off at half time. He broke his nose in a training the previous week, so obviously he was wearing a face mask and he got another bang on that, so that didn't help. That definitely impacted on Meade's potency up front. Graham Riley, maybe a little bit of a hangover is maybe the wrong word, but after losing the club final, it's very hard to bounce back from that. It's very bad. I can't comment on that, but it's very tough to bounce back from a defeat like that. So Michael Newman still out injured as well. He's a loss up front. So I wouldn't be totally negative about
when's Newman back.
I'm not entirely sure. I think he's back in training. I'm not too sure if he played for his club at the weekend, but he can't be a million miles away from being back. I don't think he'd be fit to play against Galway this weekend, which is a loss, but hopefully he'd be back for the league game after that, which I think is against Fermanagh, or away to Cork maybe.
He'll make a huge difference to that forward line. He'll just give them that little bit more danger in there. I know Lenihan's dangerous, but he's a different type of dangerous.
Yeah, a bit of experience as well. Yeah. Like, he has been around a few years, so he kind of can provide maybe a focal point to the attack. The one thing that Meath have improved on, though, between from the Kildare game and into the Derry game and even against Down, is they do look particularly solid at times at the back. I think it does take time sometimes for a manager to get his message across and get the right players in the team to just perform the roles he's looking for them. So I think from there was a massive difference between the Kildare game and the Derry match in terms of how Meath set up, in terms of getting defensive cover, and they were much harder to break down. They were much the same against Down, but they were having to chase the game, so that does alter how you approach the thing. Look, at from a Meath perspective, they're playing Galway at home this weekend. That's a huge game. Meath, up against it, you would say, against Galway, based on current form, still well capable of winning that game. And if they do, it puts them right back into contention. If they lose the game, I mean, their promotion hopes are gone. So it's more then about watching what's behind you. So Division 2, as always, is...
There's nothing behind you.
Yeah. Division 2, as always, is extremely, extremely tight. Kildare came out of the blocks very fast, looked like they were going to go, you know, win it comfortably. They get beaten by Derry, who are no-hopers up to this weekend.
Yeah. That's crazy, some of these results. Like, I mean, it just goes to show when teams of similar level play each other, it's just so unpredictable and exciting. But just to mention quickly before we go into performance of the week, the Derry goal, Conan, because there was a lot of controversy about this, and the controversy before I actually saw the footage of it that you sent me, and Keane O'Neill was talking about saying that if that happened out the field, it would be a free. I've tweeted out the footage of this. There's no foul there at all. It's a perfectly legitimate goal. McGuckian punches the ball out of the goalkeeper's hand. The ball is in the back of the net. Then his momentum carries him onto the goalkeeper, yeah. and there's a contact there. But there was a perfectly legal punch into the net. No controversy here. Oh. Absolutely legitimate goal and an unbelievable win for a Derry team under all sorts of pressure.
Yeah, I mean, it came out of nowhere. The Kildare scored 1-9 in the first 20 minutes. And then when I saw that, I sort of just switched off and thought, there's another bad week for Derry, and just kept watching the Dublin game or whatever was on. But yeah, I'll put it on the site later on SportsShow. Nothing happens. The only controversy with that goal was bad goalkeeping and then the referee deciding to give a free out for no reason.
That's what a lot of the issues were, is that the referee initially gave the free out. And
the
one thing,
I always
lynch umpires that they're not good enough, they're not proactive enough. And the umpire told the referee, you've got this one wrong, that's a legitimate goal. And listen, let's get that umpire into Croke Park for big matches. Right, up next, we're going to vote for performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just been in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a pointing coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
All right, performance of the weekend, lads. We have three nominations after our weekend of football. First up, Conan, we'll go to you first.
Find a player you probably haven't heard of him, Ryan McHugh from Donegal.
Oh yeah,
yeah, youngster, real nippy player. Like he looks like a talent. But no, honestly, jeez, the way. Like, what he's doing now is unbelievable, because Dublin know all about him. So Dublin are going out and targeting him, and every time he passes the ball off, you saw it on Sunday, he's just pushed, he's pulled. Every time he passes it, somebody's on him like a flash. If he gets a run up, they foul him, and yet he still manages to get free all the time. Like, he set up the first goal, or started the move for the first goal, and then just the way he gets free again, goes in for the second goal. It's like, how is that happening when he's under so much attention and pressure? So what he's doing under that sort of pressure, I just think, geez, like, this man deserves an all-star already. Give it him now.
I know, he's outstanding. And the gas thing about him is, for a wing back now, I know he plays wing forward as well, it's the different types of goals. Like, I mean, the one he got against Dublin in Croke Park 2 years ago when he took the tap down off Murphy, or that was against Dublin, wasn't it? Then he got another one against Galway, wasn't it? That most beautiful goal we've seen in a long time. But that was a rifle off the inside of his boot. This one was a nice little clip when he saw where Cluxton was off the inside of his boot. So this fella's finishing goals like proper corner forwards finish goals. There's no panic, and he's putting them in different sides of the net. Like, it's really, like, I don't think it should be underestimated how good these finishes are for a wing back.
Yeah, I'm going to make a very stereotypical comment that these guys that are really fast are generally not the best footballers in the world, but he's got all the skills You know, he really has that subtlety, and the finish at the weekend was beautiful. Just very calm, just rolled it into the corner, nice and easy.
Made Cluxton look very stupid, and we don't see that all that often. Like, Cluxton kind of went for like this kind of mad dive, and he didn't even, because that can put you off. Like, that might make you go, bang, I'll pull the trigger, and you know what I mean? But he didn't fall for this at all. He just clipped it into the corner. Keen, you're going for Michael Murphy.
Yeah, Michael Murphy again. It's just good to see him back to form and seem to be just happier, moving more freely. why did I pick him for performance this weekend? Just because I like him. I think he's a class act, and sometimes he has to perform a role there that probably doesn't play to his strengths all the time, but his selflessness and his willingness to sacrifice himself for the team, his leadership ability there for them, and it, with a very young team out against Dublin, I think he was exceptionally good.
Yeah, my nomination is Jack McCarron, for a few different reasons. I think his goal was beautiful. There was actually two dummies in his goal. He showed it twice, and so he sold the defender and then he sold the goalkeeper before putting an absolute rocket into the back of the net. Scored 1-3 against Kerry, in obviously in Killarney, and the fact that he's a foil now for Conor McManus, and he just makes Monaghan just look all so much more dangerous. Like, I mean, he totally transforms them, the fact that they have someone in there, and he's a bit of presence about him as well. He's no kind of slip of a fella. Like, he looks like he has a little bit about him. Horrible few years of injury, so that's why he gets my vote. And who will we go for?
I think it has to be Jack McCarron, in fairness. 1-3 has to get it.
You can still go with Ryan, because I'm going Jack, so like, you're going to be outvoted anyway, so you can stick with your Ryan if you want, buddy. You're not getting anywhere with it.
Do you know what was so good about Jack McCarron was that he caused Pat's Balan 3 weeks after he wrote Mayo off to say, "You win nothing in February." Just full circle, spectacularly.
And again, unchallenged by Michael Lester, that has to be pointed out. So Jack McCarron, you are the winner of our Performance of the Week, and you are going to get a GAA Performance of the Week mug. Haven't got them made up yet, actually. Kingston, the Cork hurler, contacted me through a mutual friend, Mark Rooney, who was over the Laois Minor footballers, contacted me and says, "Shane Kingston's been on to me there. He wants to know what he's getting for Performance of the Week." I'm not sure that he think he was getting something, where I said it's a mug. Rooney never really got back to me that.
He got his friend, yeah. It's like asking a girl out.
These are very sought after prizes, these Performance of the Week. Like, the inter-county players throughout the country hold these in very high regard. And Jack McCarron, you're our latest one. Usually we ring the Performer of the Weekend, but considering we've had Conor McManus for 20 minutes talking about Monaghan being All-Ireland contenders, we don't want to blow Monaghan up too early. McManus is really livid with us saying how
he's not going to be happy at all, is he?
Monaghan want to fly below the radar. They're top of the league, and in fairness to them at this stage, I know it's early in the year and they're not doing any of the singing, but it's still pretty impressive from them. Right, that's all we have time for this week. See you on Thursday.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.